morning, counsel.
Good morning, Your Honor, and may it please the court, Elizabeth Pepez for Appellant Counsel for Urological Interest. With the court's permission, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The sole issue on appeal is whether the district court had federal question jurisdiction over appellant's APA challenge to a regulation issued under the Stark Law portion of the Medicare Act. The answer is yes, under a bedrock rule that this court, the unanimous Supreme Court in Michigan Academy versus Bowen, and all 9 justices in the Illinois Council case agreed. In this court's words, although the Medicare Act, quote, would appear to preclude all Medicare suits founded on 1331, the Supreme Court has recognized an exception, and 1331 jurisdiction lies, quote, not only where administrative regulations foreclose judicial review, but also when roadblocks practically cut off any avenue to federal court. Now, what I'd like to try to do in the next...
What were you reading from there?
That was this court's opinion, Your Honor, on which you were on the panel in American Chiropractic.
Yeah.
Correct.
And chiropractic, and in fact in Illinois, that's all technically dicta, of course. And neither case actually created an exception. Both courts said that the case before them did not fall within such an exception, and each, I guess, delineated an exception that it wasn't finding to be present. But have you a case since the Michigan case that actually finds something to be within that exception?
Yes, Your Honor, there are a couple of district court cases. I do not have a circuit court case, but I'd like to go back to a point Your Honor made. I don't know that I would concede that the analysis that on which the fact-specific application was predicated is dicta.
Believe me, counsel, Supreme Court dicta, we don't care. We're going to follow it, even if it's...
Oh, that's great news. What I was going to say is...
afraid of that.
What I'd like to do in the next 6 minutes, if I can, is start by explaining why our case fits the exception under the controlling precedents. And then, and I don't want this to get lost, explain why those precedents preclude the government's theories of affirmance. In terms of our affirmative case, I want to begin by saying the exception fits here because our case is very much like the Michigan Academy case in which the unanimous Supreme Court allowed 1331 jurisdiction, whereas here, a plaintiff association and individual doctors could not access the administrative channel. And I want to emphasize, in that case, as in this one, none of the plaintiffs could make a claim with the agency. And this is very important. They were separated from the agency by an intermediary. We're separated from the agency by a hospital.
Yeah, what I want to ask about, and I may be being obtuse, but I'm having a hard time following one of the alleged distinctions between this and the American Chiropractic. Page 17 of your reply brief, you refer to opening brief at 37 through 39, explaining that the court emphasized that patients could facilitate, through avenues not available here, exhaustion of the association's claims. I went to 37 through 39 of the opening brief, and I didn't really find an explanation of what it is that's different about the patient's role in American Chiropractic and the patient here. If the patient was an avenue for exhaustion in American Chiropractic, why isn't the patient equally an avenue for exhaustion in the urological context?
I'm glad you asked that, Your Honor. I apologize. The brief was not clear. There are two crucial differences. First, there is no patient proxy that could go here. Unlike in chiropractic, a patient cannot bring any claim in the agency for the technical service fees at issue. So the only analog to the patient is the hospital, right?
That's what my answer is then. It's not, I believe you, and apparently it's true because the other side doesn't seem to disagree, but it is not evident to me why a patient who has gone and had, is this lithotripsy or laser surgery, whatever it is the urologists are doing here, and had that process, it wasn't evident to me why the patient wouldn't be billed for that process and then turn it in for his Medicare, and when Medicare says, no, we're not going to pay for it, have the same kind of claim as he would have if it was his somebody rubbing his back instead of shooting his kidney.
Sure, and it wasn't apparent to me either, so, and I thought you might ask this, so I have a cheat sheet because there's an answer, and the answer is in two parts. The first is there are actual regulations that preclude a patient from bringing this kind of claim, like I just mentioned. That's 42 CFR 400.202, and then the statute itself, 42 USC 1395X, little sub U, and they say basically only a provider of the hospital outpatient services, here a hospital, not a patient, can bring. And further, on page, it's appendix page 39 to our opening brief, there's an anti-assignment reg. So in chiropractic, as Your Honor knows, the court relied heavily on the fact that the patient could bring the claim and then assign it to the association's own member, the chiropractor, so the association's own members could go to the agency. But the anti-assignment regulation, too, is a second shoe that falls here, so we can't do the process this court relied on chiropractic.
Doesn't your whole case turn on the proposition that the hospitals could clearly challenge this policy, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so your whole case, for you to succeed under Illinois counsel, you have to have a theory for why that isn't a practical, realistic remedy, right?
We do, Your Honor, yes.
And your theory there is, number one, they don't have an incentive to do it, and number two, they haven't in 3 years, right?
Well, there's another part to that, Your Honor. Our first line argument is, there's no Supreme Court case or even circuit precedent that says we have to look to someone who's totally unrelated to us, namely a hospital. The other case is Illinois County, and I should be clear.
Suppose the hospitals were prepared to challenge this. You're not suggesting that the Illinois Council exception requires that everybody who has a claim be able to bring it, right?
No, that's correct, but I think the important...
Yeah. So why doesn't your case depend entirely on your ability to show that under American Chiropractic and Illinois Council that the practical unavailability of this remedy because the hospitals lack the incentive to do it is what creates your...
Well, two quick points. One is, again, to look to someone that we don't control and we have no relationship with is odd for the reasons Judge Brown noted in the Apache Nation case. But let's assume, as your question poses, that we have to do it. There is a clear reason the hospitals, we can't rely on them here, and that's that they have no incentive to challenge this rule. Now, this appeal comes up on a Rule 12 record. We pled, and the government concedes under the Wood precedent and others, this court has to take as true. Our statement, it is at JA 30 to 31, paragraph 82 of our complaint, we explain why these hospitals have no incentive to challenge the rule. So you're right. If indeed a hospital would or could be counted upon to challenge this rule and bring our claim in the agency, which is what this court in the chiropractic case of matters, it's not just any claim. It's whether we could count upon the hospital to bring the kind of challenge to the regulation that we would bring. And we make clear in the complaint, JA 30 to 31, they will not do it. This rule has been issued for more than 3 years. There are 5,800 hospitals in this country. Not a one has brought a challenge. There is no allegation that any hospital is about to bring one. So this is precisely the circumstance in which, if we are forced to rely upon a hospital to challenge our claim because it is conceded that we cannot go to the agency directly through our members or through an assignment, we are in precisely the territory the Supreme Court said is not allowed.
By the way, what says that you can't? What? Is there a regulation that says you...
Yes, it's the same regulation I cited to Chief Judge Santel. It says only providers, only those providers. Dubbed providers.
And who decides? There's no way you could be considered a provider?
The agency, Your Honor. This is the fox guarding the henhouse problem, which is another problem with their argument. They keep pointing to cases like the Block case that say where Congress has said a person cannot challenge a reg and is not part of an administrative scheme, a court might conclude that...
No, is there anything in the regulations that says you're not a provider?
The agency concedes this in their briefs. They have never given us a provider number or of a provider title. And there is a regulation that says we cannot direct bill as a provider for the services here.
What's
that
regulation?
It's in the briefs, if Your Honor will permit. I'll get it on rebuttal.
If you tell me it's in the brief, that's okay. Don't worry. What's your response to the government's argument that if you're right about this, it creates a kind of odd system whereby, direct entities that are directly involved, like providers, have to go through the administrative process, but entities that are not directly involved, like your client that are indirectly involved don't?
2 points on that, Your Honor, and this is critical, and I'm glad you asked. We are directly involved more so than the hospitals. This is a faulty premise in the government's argument, and I want to stress it. We addressed it at pages 4 to 7 of our reply brief. The regulation here implements the Stark Law portion of the Medicare Act. The Stark Law is about doctors. We are doctor-owned businesses. So the object of the statute that the regulation implements is focused on our conduct further. When you look at the regulations themselves, and they're at pages 26 to 37, of the appendix to our opening brief, they reclassify the work that we, my clients, do, not what hospitals do. So the government's assertion that this is a regime that focuses on what hospitals can bill for hospital services is a red herring. And that's why the government has never contested, as it has in many other of these cases, our standing to bring this APA case. This is truly an odd situation.
So just help me understand your position. When I asked you whether or not you were your ability to bring this case depends entirely on your argument that the hospitals are not a realistic proxy because they don't have an interest, or their interest may even be contrary. Did you say to me that your case doesn't depend on that? Is there another way you can bring this case?
Well, there's no other way that we can bring this case because, as I mentioned, neither we, the plaintiff association, nor our members can go.
I was trying to understand your theory of why you're entitled to come under the Illinois counsel exception.
Right.
When I said, doesn't it depend entirely on your theory that the hospitals have no incentive to do it and, in fact, haven't, did you tell me that there's another theory for Illinois counsel exception? No? Okay.
I think my answer was, Your Honor, there's no precedent that says we have to look to a hospital. So my first line answer to you would be, Illinois Council says you get to go under 1331, and this is Michigan Academy, where neither you nor your members can go to the agency. Now,
But I thought you agreed with me that the Illinois Council exception wasn't designed to ensure that everybody with an interest got to court. It was only designed to ensure that every issue got resolved judicially.
We don't
concede. And if the hospitals, you don't?
Well, we don't concede that. Uh-huh. I agree with you that it's not everybody who has an interest. The key thing, and this court has said it and the Supreme Court said it, and the government concedes this much. If the Illinois Council guarantee of judicial review extends to anything, it extends to a guarantee to have the claim that we, the aggrieved party, would want to bring exhausted through the agency. Now, there's only one.
That claim could be brought by somebody else.
The only possible somebody else is a hospital, Your
Honor.
That's
why I said your case turns entirely on your argument that they have no incentive to do it.
If you agree that we're required to look beyond people related to us that we don't control in any way.
That if is not answering the question.
Right, but even if we, so let's take
the
premise.
If we agree or don't agree, your case still turns on
the
hospital.
Okay, so let's say it turns, right? The hospitals, we've made the case on the Rule 12 record that they have no incentive to go. They won't go. They haven't gone. So we're in the situation where the only party that, let's say everyone agrees, could go, has no incentive to, hasn't gone, won't go. So if you require us to channel through them, you're in precisely the territory that Illinois Council said is forbidden. You're saying that if you require channeling, then the claim that we wish to bring and that could be brought by them but won't be, will never get to the court. And that's the one result that the Supreme Court said Congress did not intend and that the law does not allow.
All right. We have, as is our custom, talked you past your time, so we'll give you back 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Rudy.
Thank you, Counsel. We'll hear from the appellee.
Thank you, Your Honor, and good morning. May it please the Court, I'm Jeffrey Clare. I'm counsel for the Secretary in this matter. Your Honors, the Illinois Council and Michigan Academy cases create an exception to the jurisdictional limits of 42 U.S.C. 405H, but they do not read that provision out of the statute entirely. What 405H says is that no action against the United States or an officer or employee thereof can be brought on claims arising under the statute under federal question jurisdiction. Now, the key to the plaintiff's case is that Illinois Council creates what they essentially argue was an enormous exception to that rule. They say that anyone with an interest in a Medicare question.
Well, suppose they're wrong about that. Suppose their argument isn't anyone with an interest, but anyone with an interest in an issue in a situation where no one else has an incentive to bring. Suppose that's their argument.
Well, then their claim is still barred, Your Honor.
Okay, tell us why.
That's what you need to come to.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because they're not arguing. I mean, I don't think they're seriously arguing what you just said, but...
Well, Your Honor,
I think their core argument is, look...
What is the exception if it doesn't include them?
Yeah.
Why are they not included in the exception described in Illinois Council?
Right.
Your Honor, because if you look at the facts of Illinois Council and the facts of Michigan Academy, they were providers who had direct interests in the program. They were program participants. In the case of Michigan Academy, they were physicians who had claims for Medicare reimbursement. Their contention was that the Medicare was not adjudicating their claims properly, and they had no avenue for review under the statute. In that context, where you had a program participant who had rights or duties that they could not vindicate under the statutory remedies, the court said, in that context, where there are no such remedies,
you seem to be going to whether there is a remedy instead of whether there is a right to access to the courts. You're saying they don't have access because in the end they're going to lose.
Your Honor, what we're suggesting is that the Illinois Council exception is confined to parties who have rights or duties under the statute that cannot otherwise be vindicated.
If they are being injured, and I don't think you can seriously contest this, that they're being injured by this regulation.
Yes, that we would concede.
They have standing.
They have standing, yes.
And why does not the Illinois Illinois Council exception include them as well as the provider? You tell me it includes only the provider. I'm asking you, why should we agree with you on that?
Well, Your Honor, first, because the court was only dealing with parties who had rights or duties under the statute.
Yeah, but what in the opinions of the court suggests that that was a dispositive factor?
Well, Your Honor, the court simply didn't have before the question of parties who have an interest in how hospitals
are. That doesn't mean that the principle of the case is broader. You could read the cases as much broader.
You could, Your Honor, right, if you didn't have the language of 405H, which still applies, which says that no claim arising under the statute can be brought under federal question jurisdiction.
The problem is we are looking to something that the court is a court recognized exception to that statute. We're attempting to find the breadth of that court-recognized exception. It isn't an answer to our question to say, well, the statute precludes this litigation. The statute precludes this litigation unless this case comes within the Illinois Council exception.
Yes, Your Honor.
And what we're trying to find out is why we should construe the Illinois Council exception as narrowly as you tell us it has to be construed.
Well, Your Honor, because consider first the ramifications of that interpretation of Illinois Council. It would suggest that parties with a more tangential and indirect interest in the program have a fast-tracked federal question remedy that is withheld from
the parties with the more direct. Counsel Fertel just said that their interest is not tangential, that they are, in fact, the targets.
Well, there we would...
Law and of these regulations.
We strenuously disagree, Your Honor.
I suspected that, but why?
Well, because the members of Plaintiffs Association are medical supply companies, essentially. Yeah. They are not physicians, and they are not hospitals. If they were hospitals, they did not like the limitations on reimbursement posed by this regulation, the hospitals could sue. If they were physicians submitting claims for physician reimbursement for these services, bearing in mind that these services can be provided in a physician's office and they can be reimbursed in a physician's office, then the physicians could bring that claim.
But it's precisely because of the nature of the entity here that they can't do that. Another entity owned by physicians, apparently, at which the regulation is directed and the statute is directed.
Your Honor, this
that doesn't sound tangential. That sounds rather direct.
Your Honor, the Stark Law is directed at two parties. It's directed at providers. The Stark Law is directed, this is 1395NN, subsection A, is directed at two parties, a referring physician and a provider that renders services on a referral from a physician. And it defines certain circumstances in which doctors who make such referrals can be sanctioned and which providers who provide services on such a referral cannot be paid. The members of Plaintiffs Association are neither of those entities. They are not hospitals. They have no...
Why are they not being paid?
Well, because they are not providers under the statute. Now, this is...
Are providers who bill this through being paid for these services?
Well, the purpose of the regulation.
Can a hospital get reimbursement for the service?
The purpose of the regulation is to state that hospitals may not be paid. Mm-hmm. But hospitals that were they dissatisfied with that claim in any way would have avenues under the statute.
What I'm still trying to get at is how you can call this tangential when it's knocking them out of the game.
Well, Your Honor, it's tangential in the sense of the entities that have rights and duties under the statute. These are not the plaintiff members. Are not entities or individuals that have any right to payment. They are not regulated by the statute. Unlike the plaintiffs in Michigan Academy, they are not doctors who can render services and submit claims for reimbursement. Unlike the skilled nursing facilities in Illinois Council, they are not subject to regulatory directives of the secretary. They merely contract with entities that have such status. The entities that have such status can bring claims under the statute. And our point is that the Illinois Council exception is limited to such entities. It does not purport to create this sort of upside-down scheme in which the entities that have duties and rights and responsibilities under the statute have to exhaust, and parties that merely contract with such entities get some sort of fast-track avenue of judicial review. This is a construction of the statute that is in no way endorsed by the Supreme Court in either of those opinions. It's not something that can be derived from the facts or the procedural posture of those cases, and it urges on the court a construction of the jurisdictional limitations that simply makes no sense. You cannot attribute to Congress a sound reason for creating such an arbitrarily and wholly irrational distinction.
Ordinarily, there is a presumption of administrative review which, absent some statutory restriction, would entitle someone who is negatively affected, has standing by reason of a regulation, to get review of an APA or 1331 nature. You would agree with me so far?
Yes, Abbott Labs holds that.
Right. So if there were no limitation in the statute, such as the one you're referring to, if there were no limitation, then would it not be the case that these entities would be able to seek review under 1331 or APA?
Well, Your Honor, I think the answer to that question lies in the Supreme Court's analysis in cases like Fausto and CNI v. Bach. And there are two circumstances, three circumstances the court outlines where such remedies would not be available. First, if there's an express statutory bar to jurisdiction, we say you have that here.
That's what you say you have.
405A.
I'm saying, assuming that it were not for that.
Right. And secondly, Your Honor, the court has said in cases like Fausto that even in the absence of an express statutory bar, you can infer an intent to preclude review from a detailed remedial scheme that offers remedies for some parties and withholds remedies from other parties. You also have that here. And third, the court said you can infer.
But even though we have that here, we have Illinois Council saying that that's not sufficient, that you need a clear congressional intent.
You do, and you have that in Section 405H, Your Honor, which says in unequivocal and express terms and in language the Supreme Court is mm-hmm. characterized as sweeping and direct, provides that no action on a claim arising under this statute can be brought under federal question jurisdiction. The statute, we believe, is clear, Your Honor, and the Illinois Council and Michigan Academy exceptions.
But they're not making a claim for reimbursement under the statute.
They are not.
Right. And that's why they're not covered by 405H.
Well, the court addressed this question, uh-huh. I believe, in either Michigan Academy or Heckler v. Ringer, yeah. Addressed whether the operative statutory language refers to recover on a claim, and the court addressed whether that was limited to claims for monetary compensation, and it said clearly it is not. It uh-huh. really meant could recover on uh-huh. a legal claim in the sense of prevail on some legal theory or argument uh-huh. as to what the statute.
Now, you were about to come to a third exception on the greater level of generality.
Under CNI v. Block, the third exception is where there is a sort of settled judicial construction that rights are not available and Congress has acquiesced in that construction. Your Honor, I wanted to turn very briefly to
that. That one would not at all be applicable.
Not in this instance. It's not a well, as Your Honor pointed out, there are no
cases. You win on the statute, and if you win, you do so because the statute applies and the exception doesn't.
That's correct, Your Honor. The plaintiffs have argued that
you're out of time, but we've talked a lot, and I'll give you two more minutes.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Go ahead. You have two more minutes. Go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. The plaintiffs have argued that they have been arbitrarily excluded from the remedies that the avenues of judicial review. They attribute this exclusion to arbitrary discretionary determinations of the secretary. It is those determinations, they say, that deny them provider status. I want to make a couple points about this argument. As a threshold matter, Your Honor, this is contrary to the allegations of their complaint. Page allegation number 80 at page 30 of the joint appendix says they're not providers because the Social Security Act says that they're not providers. Secondly, this is not an argument that I, in my opinion, was developed in the opening brief. This is an argument that was raised for the first time in reply, and I think the court ought to deem that argument waived in this circumstance. Third, it is flatly and categorically incorrect. Section 1395 double C of the Social Security Act states in unequivocal terms that in order to submit a claim for reimbursement, you must be a provider and you must have a provider agreement signed and submitted by
and
the secretary.
And say again who makes that determination. Is that decided by statute?
The statute decides who is a provider. In the case of hospital services, it says in 1395X, subpart B, it defines hospital services as services among many other criteria rendered by a hospital, and I believe in subsection E of 1395X, these are 42 U.S.C. sites, Your Honor. It defines who is a hospital. It has a whole litany of requirements for who is a hospital, including things like utilization review, staffing requirements, licensure by
these
state
are,
facilities.
These are regulations you're citing now.
No, I, Your Honor.
You're citing the statute?
I am citing
so
42.
So this is your answer to her Fox Harding and House.
Yes,
this is a statutory question.
This is a statutory
Congress
question.
Has decided that
Congress
only
decided.
Hospitals and doctors are providers.
Well, there are different types of providers under the statute. In the case of hospital services, the Congress has decided, you know, limited the range of who can be a hospital. Mm-hmm. In the case of physician services, there are statutory provisions that say who can be a physician. Mm-hmm. In the case of home health services, in the case of skilled nursing facilities, each of these providers under the statute is defined by statutory terms. It is clear beyond peradventure of doubt that plaintiff's members meet none of these criteria, and it is clear beyond peradventure of doubt that these are criteria established by the statute. Not
yeah,
by
we
the
have statute. Again talked you past even the 2 minutes, and one more, in fact.
And I thank you for the
thank
court's
thank you, counsel. We will issue 2 minutes back to the appellant.
Thank you, Your Honor. A couple of points. First, one need only compare what counsel said on the record to page A7, which is the actual Stark Law provision that's an issue. It does not say that the Stark Law provision applies to physicians and providers. It does not say that. Look on page A7. It oh. says that the Stark Law provides to physicians and also to entities in which physicians have a financial relationship, that is us. So the Stark Law that he's citing applies directly to us, and the regulation that is harming us reclassifies what we do as the furnishing of a designated health service that puts our work squarely in the crosshairs of the Stark Law, where it was not before under regulations for 7 years from 01 to 08. So that's point one, is this Stark Law, and the provisions he's citing specifically okay. are not
two,
about providers.
Is point two going to be a response to counsel's argument that only providers can take advantage of the Illinois counsel exception?
Yes, Your Honor. And it's
what's your answer to that?
There's the answer is the Supreme Court has rejected that argument, and I want to stress this, and this also goes to Chief Judge Santel's point. This Illinois counsel exception is not just judge-made. In Bowen versus Michigan Academy, the U.S. Supreme Court said Congress did not intend to foreclose review of APA challenges to Medicare regs.
But was that a case involving a provider?
Well, this is what's interesting. I don't know if the agency dubbed them providers or not. What I can tell you is this, because it's clear from the
face. What was the agency in that case?
The agency was HHS. It was a Medicare agency.
No, I understand that, but who was bringing that case?
It was an association of doctors.
Of doctors.
And doctors.
Who are providers.
But here's why they couldn't bring a claim, Your Honor.
But that's not the question I'm asking you. He says the government's argument is that 405 makes clear that only providers can bring these claims, and that Michigan Academy and Illinois Councils, they're channeling the channeling that what they rule is that the channeling aspects of 405 apply to providers, nobody else, and that providers who for some reason can't take advantage of the administrative process then have a judicial remedy, but it's limited to providers.
Your Honor, that's not correct.
I know it's not, true, but well, no, I'm not saying I know it's not. I know you don't think it is, but tell me why.
Well, I'll tell you why. It may be that the channeling is limited to providers, but what Michigan Academy
that
says...
No, but Michigan Academy involved a provider, didn't it?
Yeah, but the right to judicial review is what it's at issue here. And it says if you're not a provider, but you nonetheless have standing to challenge an APA reg, the question is, if you can't go and exhaust that and no one else can, you know what the answer is? It's not that it doesn't get to the court. It's that you get to go under 1331. And the reason the court held that in Michigan Academy is
Let me just try once more.
Yeah.
I know you think that non-providers should have a 1331 remedy if they can't take advantage of the administrative process. But I want you to respond to the government's argument that Michigan Academy and Illinois Council are all in the context of providers.
Okay, first
of all. When you look at 405, all Michigan Academy and Illinois Council are exceptions to 405 for, I think this is their argument, for providers who can't take advantage of the administrative process.
Okay, but let's...
Not true?
The provider designation is a label, but what Michigan Academy was talking about, when you look at it, it engages the Block case that's the government's best case, and it says what you have to look at in saying whether someone can't have a right to judicial review of a reg is whether they're part of the contemplated group of plaintiffs or not. And you look to whether Congress excluded them. Now, what I want to point out, and this is complicated, is that the agency here, and it is a fox guarding the hen house issue, yes, there's a statutory provision that defines providers of hospital services. What the agency has done here is a tricky thing. They have said that what we provide as a service is a hospital outpatient service so as to put us in the crosshairs of the Stark Law. But they won't call us a provider and allow us to access the administrative channel to challenge the very reg that they concede is killing our business. There's nothing in the statute that compels that. And if you look at what Michigan Academy says about Block, Block says, and Justice O'Connor was clear, you don't just look to the text, which is this 405H, you look at the structure and the purpose, and then all eight justices concluded, Justice Rehnquist was recused, that Congress did not intend to foreclose people like us from challenging, even if we can't, by virtue of the agency's designations, go into the administrative channel. And the other crucial point is that you can't conclude that we're not part of the scheme here because, as A7 of the appendix shows, we are the object of this, which is why they don't challenge our standing. And so we agree if a hospital would or could be relied upon to take up this claim for us, great. But the record establishes, and they have not refuted, that they will, which means the exception applies. And if it doesn't apply here, I can't think of a case in which it would.
I think we have again taken you also beyond your time. And
thank you,
I rarely see a case in which we don't anymore. Case is submitted. Give us a recess.